Indonesia is where the old imperialism meets the new. This is a country that should not be poor. It's rich in almost everything. Mountains of copper and gold, oil, timber, and the skills and labor of its people. Colonized by the Dutch in the 16th century, Indonesia was plundered by the West for hundreds of years, a debt that is yet to be paid back.
Globalization is used by its champions to suggest a coming together of people of all races, of all countries, and it will relieve poverty, it will distribute wealth. What we're actually seeing is precisely the opposite processes in train, that the poor are becoming markedly poorer, while the very wealthy are becoming staggeringly wealthy.
And here are some of the staggeringly wealthy. This is a wedding in Jakarta of the Indonesian elite. Two merchant families are being united. 4 years ago, the World Bank called Indonesia a dynamic economic success, a model pupil of the global economy. Among the Versace dresses and diamonds are those who've reaped the benefits of the new global freedoms. Freedom to watch money make more money. In this respect, they could be any nationality. Outside this wedding, there's another world. In Indonesia, as many as 70 million people live in extreme poverty. We calculate that it would take an Indonesian worker, like this waiter, 400 years to pay for a wedding reception like this. Less than 5 miles away is the backyard of the global economy, the site of the dynamic success you don't see. This is a labor camp that's home to workers who make the clothes we buy in the high streets and shopping malls. This is the human price paid for our fashionable trainers, our smart shirts, our jeans with a tag that says, "Made in Indonesia." Young people living here who make the famous brands are paid on average the equivalent of 72 pence a day, about a dollar. That's the legal minimum wage in Indonesia. According to the Indonesian government, it's just over half a living wage. The dormitories are made from breeze blocks and packing cases. When it rains, they flood. There are open sewers and no clean running water. Many of the children are undernourished and prey to disease. While I was filming here, I caught dengue fever, carried by the mosquitoes which infest these slums. It kills children. The conditions here are not very different from workers' camps in other parts of Asia, in Africa and Latin America, where the famous brands are also made cheaply for lucrative Western markets. And this is where they work, in what is called an economic processing zone, which means a vast area of sweatshops. The factories may look modern, but once you step inside, you feel the claustrophobia of the workers, the sheer frenzy of their production, and you see their fatigue. The factories are owned by Taiwanese and Korean contractors who employ cheap labor to make the products of famous brands such as Nike, Reebok, and Adidas. We looked at one famous brand, Gap. The working conditions we found are by no means the worst. We found more than 1,000 mostly young women working crowded together under the glare of strip lighting in temperatures that can reach 40 degrees centigrade. The only air conditioning is upstairs where the bosses are. Working hours can vary and can be increased dramatically when an urgent export order has to be met. We surveyed 5 factories regarded as typical, and I interviewed workers from all over Jakarta.
You work a 24-hour shift with just a couple of breaks, and then 2 hours later you start another shift. So, in effect, you work a 36-hour shift Are you given any choice?
Maybe so.
On these long 24-hour shifts, do you recall what labels you were packing?
Kebanyakan cape sama olive.
These boxer shorts were made in one of the factories we investigated. Before we left London, we bought a pair at a Gap store in Oxford Street for £8. Out of that £8, an Indonesian worker gets less than 4 pence. It's the same for running shoes that sell for £100. Out of that £100, a worker gets around 40 pence. That wouldn't even buy the laces. Last year, the chief executive of Gap earned more than $5.5 million. The profits of Gap were $1.38 billion. And this is typical of many multinational companies. We asked the Gap company for an interview, but they declined.
One of the things that we can do to take action in support of better conditions for people in developing countries is, when we buy anything, ask the retailer where this product comes from, under what conditions it's produced. Write to the company that made the product and say you want assurances that this comes from a factory that treats its workers well, that gives its workers rights to be able to form trade unions, etc. And these are some very basic ways in which we can act as informed consumers.
Globalization in Asia has a secret history. The great sweatshops and banks and luxury hotels in Indonesia were built on the mass murder of as many as 1 million people, an episode the West would prefer to forget. But many people here have not forgotten. In recent years, people all over the country have begun searching for the remains of loved ones murdered when General Suharto seized power in the mid-1960s, aided by the United States and Britain. Until recently, the truth of this episode has remained so secret that this is the only known photograph of the atrocities.
One day in early October 1965, a gang of thugs entered this school in Jakarta and beat to death the headmaster. His murder was typical of the slaughter of more than 1 million people, teachers, students, civil servants, peasant farmers. Described by the CIA as one of the worst mass murders of the 20th century, the origins of this terrible episode have been covered in mystery. Certainly it brought to power General Suharto. But what is now emerging is the extent to which he was secretly backed by the United States and Britain and by Western business leaders. Within a year of the bloodbath, Indonesia's economy was effectively redesigned in America, giving the West access to vast mineral wealth, markets, and cheap labor, what President Nixon called the greatest prize in Asia.
To Western business, the great value of General Suharto was that he succeeded in getting rid of the founder of modern Indonesia, Ahmed Sukarno, a nationalist who believed in economic independence for his people. He kept the great Western corporations out of Indonesia and threw out their agents, the World Bank and the International Monetary Fund. It was only when one of his generals, Suharto, seized power that the door was opened to Asia's greatest prize.
When the Suharto regime came in after the putsch, they were able to make a lot of the fact that they were calling the IMF and the World Bank back in. They were going to rescue them, you see, and British propaganda in particular made a lot of this. You know, the IMF was decent and it was going to bring order and everything was going to be lovely in the Indonesian garden. And as I say, a British diplomat still alive has said to me that was very much a part of the deal.
Britain and the United States secretly conspired to back General Suharto. The American ambassador assured him that the US government is generally sympathetic with and admiring of what the army is doing. Thousands were rounded up, What was not known at the time was later revealed by American officials. The CIA had supplied a list of 5,000 opponents to be assassinated, and embassy officials ticked off their names as they were murdered. The British ambassador recommended a little shooting as an essential preliminary to effective change.
In the first few days, the British sources in particular purported not really to know what was going on. Of course they knew what was happening. I mean, there were bodies being washed up on the lawn of the British consulate in Surabaya. There were bodies floating all over the Malacca Strait and so forth. A man called Hadi Broto, a lieutenant colonel or something, was anxious to take some troops, Indonesian troops, from the east coast of Sumatra, from the northeast coast of Sumatra, to east and central Java, so that they could take part in what we now know was this terrible Holocaust, really. He found a Panamanian ship, and the ship sailed with the troops down the Malacca Strait, escorted by two British warships.
So the British were directly involved in, as what you describe, as a Holocaust.
Well, I would count that some sort of involvement, wouldn't you?
The American press reported these events not as a crime against humanity, but in terms of their economic advantage to the West. Time magazine called them vengeance with a smile, and the West's best news for years. Others described a gleam of light in Asia. The seeds of globalization were planted in the bloodbath. In 1967, the Time Life Corporation sponsored a conference in Switzerland that planned the corporate takeover of Indonesia. It was attended by the most powerful businessmen in the world, such as David Rockefeller. The giants of Western capitalism were represented: the oil companies, the banks, General Motors, British Leyland, ICI, British American Tobacco, Lehman Brothers, American Express, Siemens. Across the table were Indonesian leaders approved by General Suharto. For Western business, it was the start of the gold rush, which later became known as globalization. No one mentioned the killing of a million people.
I've never, ever heard of a situation like this for any country where global capital essentially holds a meeting with state and hammers out the conditions of their own entry into the country. The conference went on for 3 days. The first day was when the Indonesians spoke and essentially made their case. They divided into five different sections on the second day. Sectoral meetings, mining in one room, food services, light industry in another, banking and finance in another, Chase Manhattan was there, and simultaneously they hammered out policies that were going to be acceptable to these global investors on a sector by sector basis, with each of the people going around the table saying, this is what we need to see, this, 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 and they basically designed the legal infrastructure for investment in Indonesia.